Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Play the music in really quietly.
It's all right, he can't hear it.
Okay. We'll just talk like this. Insane
in the Membrane. Hello, welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane, with me, Rich Wilson, and Bodie Wilson this week. You've got quite the double act, and we're joined by the lovely Laura Smith. Hello, mate.
Hello, how are we doing? We're doing all right. Can I let everyone know we've just spent 15 minutes wondering whether Bodie's going to play ball, and now he's sort of cool, so we're doing it, aren't we? And I'm doing this. So Rich has been rocking his son, and I've been going, I've been like so willing it that I've been like that, mate.
I think that's it. We're all sort of kind of bouncing along. It's funny because I've seen videos of mums. They're doing stuff, they're cooking, they've got the baby, they've got this and that. And I'm like, how hard can it be? I'll tell you how hard it is. Because they just, once he starts, that's it. You have to down tools.
Well, this is they're wired for survival, aren't they? So there is something about a baby's cry that comes to the quick, as it should. So it's just this primal, what you're dealing with there, Rich, is millions of years of evolution to make you down tools, because this baby boy needs caring for. Do you know what I mean? That is you got no chance is what I'm saying. We've got no chance.
He's mucking up my podcast.
Yeah. It's like... A million years of evolution. What's a podcast? I'm 12 weeks old. Yeah.
Oh, man. You can't take it personally. But I know. I remember when I had it, because it's been nearly 27 years since I had a baby.
Have you got kids then? You got an older kids?
Yeah, I've got two. They're 27 and, they were 32 and 27 this year.
How mad is that? I did wonder, actually, because obviously you see on the old socials about the baby, and I did wonder, because of your, your
advancing years.
Because my brother's become a parent in his 40s, and I just thought, oh, that's so funny watching Mr. Livy's life kind of go, everything stops, do you know what I mean?
You don't realise. I thought, because I've done it before, I'm like, how hard can it be? It's so different now. And you go, and you're older as well.
Well, you're older, and also, let's not talk rubbish now. You're a cockney man. 32 years ago, I doubt you were hands-on.
No.
No, let's not talk shit now. You weren't this guy.
No. They're walking around with a Bible under my arm going, no.
And a papoose. Yeah. It weren't that. It was never that.
Yeah,
I love it when men go, it's easy. You go, sorry, what?
Oh. Yeah, mate.
Yeah, yeah, well, call him out, Bodie. Call him out on his nonsense.
Yeah, you're full of shit, Dad.
But it's nice, though. It's just nice. I mean, like, it's so funny, like, watching my... like, when they were really little, the babies, it's mum. And obviously I'm gigging a lot. It's just dad. I've got very much a sort of stepdad role in my kids' lives. I'm like, you all right? What, you still into Pokemon, are you? Oh, what's that? Do you know what I mean? I'm like, I do guest appearances in my ass.
Doing all the good bits, and then you slide off.
Sort of.
So they go, oh, she's a hero. I love her. Oh, dad's here again. Knobhead.
No. Oh, well, you got to make it work. That's the thing. You got to make it work.
You were talking just now before we started recording about community.
Oh, and mate.
We don't really seem to have that. Whereas when I was growing up, like, you know, you always running in and out of people's houses and,
you sort of, everyone was involved and the babies, you know, I just remember my mum chatting on the street with everyone. And
we were all a
bit of an insignificance, really. Not an insignificance, but we were sort of slightly a self-governing system. I mean, my mum would tell it very differently, but, you know, once we were fed and watered in the morning, it was like, say hello. and also just that multi-generational thing, like I'm still down the road from my mum and, you know, like I always have a lot of family in and out and I don't know how anyone does it any differently.
No.
It's like I do something like I do the Desi circuit and, you know, a lot of Asian women in the audience and I always sort of make a joke where I go, you know, these sort of introduction marriages that you go, oh my God, this is terrible. And finding out friends when I was growing up, like would get married and live with their in-laws. And you think, right. Oh, this is so, you know, archaic and poor you. And I'm like, I always make the joke. I'll tell you what's sexy, not going back to work after you have kids. I'll tell you what's sexy, having living babysitters. That's sexy, mate. Yeah. So it's like you do see these still these models of multi-generational households. And, your body's been through so much and there's just this idea that you can do it all. And it's like, just on a basic level, you've all been through it. Do you know what I mean? You've been through it, ain't you, Bodie?
You've been through it, mate. You're chipping
you were so
in.
Close.
Oh, that little face. Come on, come on, mate. You're right there, bro.
Yeah.
Come on. No.
Oh, mate. No. You're nearly there. He's so close to, like, doing it.
He is. Come on, mate. This is it. It's that. I don't. Like, there's loads of groups now that everyone goes to. We go to groups.
Yeah.
You know, there's like mother and toddler, and there's dad and this, and there's that. But, mate.
But there's always an edge of. I think there's always an edge of comparison there. Do you know what I mean? There's an edge of, like. You see women, you know, they go to them, they get themselves together to go, and there's always them ones that go, oh, let's get through the night. I mean, it's so funny, we go, good baby, are they a good baby? We just mean, are they quiet? Do they sleep? Do you know what I mean? And it's like, oh. And, it is hard, and you don't want to, you want the team around him, don't you? And it's like,
Oh, mate, come on. No.
You were nearly there. You were nearly there. You nearly win. Last fight. It's like, I think they sometimes do it like the villain in a horror movie. You were almost out, mate. You were almost out. Why are you trying it, Bodie? You were almost out.
He's just sitting there. He knows he wants to go.
Yeah.
He knows he wants to go. And he's just going, yeah, but I've got things to look at.
Yeah, and you're talking, Dad. I don't know who you're talking to. I don't know what's going on. And quite frankly, you're just a second-rate mum.
Where's mum? What's happening with this? Yeah. mate. But, about having... I just remember there was, like you said earlier, there weren't clubs and that to go to. We were just fed in the morning, watered, you know, brushed. We weren't even bathed. We were just like, right, that'll do. Off you pop.
Yeah,
I'll see you tonight, and don't make a fuss.
Well, this is—I think we're in the worst. We are for all of it. I hate all sort of like this. Sort of, we love victims, don't we, in this culture? But I think we're in the worst stage of parenting, where we're in a very child-centric culture because we're sort of post, you know, Freudian analysis. We've had this whole flipping century of like understanding psychology, and then we've got the internet giving us this pop psychology of trauma and small t trauma and how things affect us. So we have this awareness, and we're all in therapy. So we've all probably had therapy.
That's it.
And then you're having kids, so you're very hyper aware of trying to not mess up your kids.
Yeah.
And then you're really child-centric. Everything's geared towards the child. But then you ain't got any time. You're meant to be working as well. So
you've got this
awareness, but you're not allowed to be full-time parents. Oh!
No, I think we're going to have to... come on. You're fighting it. Come on. Yeah,
but I'm cute.
But... mate, come on. We're nearly there. Yeah, look. Yawn in. Look at that.
Come on.
He knows.
Trying it. My mum always says, I think they make them so cute, so you just have to love them.
Well, that's it, isn't it? There's something in it about not eating them. That's why they smile at you. They're like, don't eat me, don't eat me. I'm like, I'm going to. Oh, mate, come on. Yeah, you got it. Oh, mate. I'm going to have to go and sort him out, I think.
Oh.
I'm really sorry.
Well, listen, I'm about, if you want a message, I am about for next hour or so.
All right.
So let me know.
All right, lovely. Let me sort this out and I'll be back. Thanks, Laura.
All right, no worries.
Sorry, mate. All right,
no worries. Bye.
So we're going for part two. I'll play the music in. Here we go. There we
are. Oh, hello. And welcome to your favourite podcast, Insane in the Mental.
He's asleep.
Sorry, mate. He is. He's gone off.
Oh.
Bless him.
You've either got it or you ain't, eh, Rich?
I am.
I'll be back.
I'm
just going to do some hero shit.
Yeah, yeah, I'll be back in a minute. Not all heroes wear capes, especially capes covered in sick. Yeah. Thanks for understanding. Appreciate that. But, you know, you've been there, haven't you, yourself? You know how it is.
Oh, mate, the actual, especially like when I first started out, you know, when everything was like, oh my God, I'm doing this podcast or something was like that.
Yeah.
It was like, right, you know, saying to my husband, right, Ali, you get the kids, just tie them up, gags on. You know what I mean? It's like, everything was like, ah. And then you just get a bit more relaxed, don't you? And you just sort of, you just go, this is what's going on. I have kids tearing about the bloody ass and screaming it down. So take me as I am.
I think people like that. I think that's what they like about this now, is that it's walks and all. Like you're getting a bit of a behind the scenes look at someone's life. Like you see them on the TV and doing whatever they're doing, and they're like, oh, that's a life, isn't it? And then we really want to see there's a pile of washing behind them and like dirty nappies, and like, that's what you really want to see.
Well, this is it. I mean, my tour poster, subtle plug, but it's funny. Mate. Yeah, but it was like, when you're thinking of the concept, I wanted it to be like, I've got this big bougie gown on. And so many people go, oh, I didn't even notice that other bit. But I'm like leaning on an overfilling laundry basket.
That's right, yeah.
And it's called Living My Best Life. But it's like to say, if you are trying to live your best life, the fucking laundry's still waiting for you. And also, I suppose a bit, if you want to really get into it, is that like, especially as a woman, do you know what I mean? It's like, whatever hustle you're going for, something else is suffering at home. Do you know what I mean? Like, something's not getting done at home. But you're spot on about that, though, because it's like, we'll get into this, but like the comedians talking about how, you know, people don't have to behave in clubs anymore. They're just shouting out. They're just talking. They're walking across the stage. It's like there's no longer this sort of, hang on a minute, do you know, like the division's been dissolved now.
It's
like,
I
want to kind of kick off at Virgin Media, but I can hear someone or something like that, or like my landlord has an association or something, and it's like, what you'll get is like someone's kids in the background, and you're like, I won't go too hard, Samantha, you're doing your best, do you know what I mean?
I think that's it. It's that there is now, because of the internet, I think there is that, there isn't that barrier now.
No.
We people do see it as like, well, like when we're up talking about what we talk about, they're like, well, I could do that. <You know? laughs> Why am I sitting here watching this knobhead?
Yeah, or I think in the clubs, there's an element of like, people are just consuming media. They've been at home, especially lockdown. They've just been consuming this media. And I think actually people got very selfish. There was this sort of rhetoric about, it's so whatever you do is okay to survive, and that is true. You know, if you're just whatever you're doing is good, we've just got to get through this and survive. Some people that got out of survival mode, like, no, you're back now. Do you know what I mean?
Know your place.
Yeah, we're part of a community now again. Do you know what I mean? It's not the Larry show, it's not the fucking Alex show or whatever it is. It's this guy, and so that's what I think a lot of comedians are picking up on, where they're going, do you know the dynamic here?
You're
in your living room. You know what I mean? You're not scratching your balls and fucking having a sniff. We're in this. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Show some respect. I'm an artist.
Yeah. And right. And now I'm going to talk about scratching my balls and having a sniff.
Yeah, you're right. It's a funny position to be in, isn't it? But do you find, we'll talk about it, you know, do you find, you had such a life-changing diagnosis?
Oh yeah,
like once that's happened to you, that must change so much your perspective on things.
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, you know what it's like. It's like anything, you know, you can do these big kind of things. I mean, when I think about my early diagnosis, you know, he's in there.
Yeah.
He's
quite sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
You know, birds flying overhead, everything's like, do you know what I mean? It's like everything can just be, the big things in life make you feel the big things and have this big uprooting, but it's like anything, it's like maintaining it. I think it's like a garden. You go, it's like you can go and do this big bit of therapy, or you can go and do this healing retreat, or ayahuasca, or DMT. You know, you can do these big things. And the truth is, we are what we do every day, aren't we? So if I'm just an aggy, tired, fucking grumpy bastard that hates everyone on the tube, that's who I am. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like a garden. You kind of go, right, we're getting the garden sorted. So you do this big, you know, you can get the diggers in, you can do the big uprooting, you can lay all the turf and the... That garden's only going to stay nice from, like, hoeing and pruning and maintaining. And I think that... there's something I miss about that survival mode. There's something, I love the attention. I won't lie to you. It was like, oh, I'm ill. Okay. Everything, like, just like, I'm in survival mode, so I could do what I like. Do you know
what I mean? Right. Yeah.
Which was massive for me, because I was a young mum and I've always worked and hustled. So it's like I had a license to take care of myself, which felt really nice.
Mm.
But also just this appreciation, everything just felt so raw and delicate, and me and my husband were just like so in it together. But I am still like, you think you're never gonna not be like that, but of course you're like, stop breathing, I've got to slowly change my breath to calm down. Do you know what I mean? You still go back to that, but
going back to how it was. Yeah,
yeah, of course. And you want that too, but there is something, it's like there is magic that happens on a chemo ward, how you connect to each other. You know, radiotherapy, you have it daily and you just know the same people. There's this human connection that is lost in everything else you do. You know what I mean? And you know, so there was loads of good in it. And I do try and maintain that. I want to be present. I do, like, I love people. I kind of care for people. Even, you know what we're like, we'll cut each other off on the circuit and all that. But then when you sort of, talk to someone and find something out about them or something like that, or see them in a different light, you go, oh, bless them. You know, it is a little bit of siblinghood, isn't it? You are going, oh, I do love you, really. You are a fucking nightmare. And your Instagram pisses me off and stop doing so many reels, but you go, oh, I love you, really. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
So I think I do, I mean, if my husband gets ill, I can't bear it. I cannot.
Oh, really?
I love him. We're just so, like, value each other. So, yeah, there's all that going on. But, it has changed me, and it has, it's just changed, like, I'm just kinder to myself, really. I'm more forgiving to myself. I think there was this sort of weird feeling of inevitability when I got my diagnosis. I thought, I've grafted a lot in my life. It's been heavy. There's a lot. It just felt, I know people, the jury's out on a lot of this stuff, but it just felt very much like a physical manifestation of shit I've been carrying my whole life, if I'm honest.
Really?
And my big process was, I did a lot of healing. I had a spiritual healer. I had a hypnotherapist, and I had, I did like cranial osteopathy. I did like restorative yoga. No one seems to remember these, but we had one. We had like a puzzle when we were kids that had like a mercury in it, and you could shake it up. And then you try and gather the big blob back to get it in one place. And I felt like a lot of my healing was like on a cosmic level. I was gathering myself back together. Like everything, I'm back. I felt very, everything felt very fractious. Do you know what I mean? Just from years of, you know what it's like, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a nice gathering together of myself, period, and that hasn't gone, you know.
It must have been, when you get a diagnosis like that, and you're like, oh, fuck, this is serious now, and you've got kids, and you want to stay here.
Be around.
So you start sort of reaching out, not in desperation, but you kind of like, you open yourself up, like you just mentioned, spirituality, and you know, you're just trying to find anything. You're kind of like, look, I just, whatever's out there, give us a bit of a touch. Yeah. I need something.
Yeah, it's like Pokemon, catch them all, and you welcome it all. You know, you welcome all the prayers and you welcome it all. I mean, I said to my sister, and it was while I was waiting for results, and everyone says, you know, think positive and all that. But it's very funny when it is bad, you kind of know at the point, you know what I mean? Mm. Like I've had lumps and bumps before, and they're like, you know, routine. I'll rock up the doctor's, like up to the hospital, to, you know, have the biopsy or scan or whatever on my own. I didn't think nothing of it. Like I just I didn't think anything of it at that point. And then it's like the cavalry arrives and I'm like trying to get reception down to my husband, you better go up here. So by the time he arrived, he walked into a room where it was like, there was a team around me already and, you know, results coming back. So, and I remember walking the dog or so with my sister and I said to her, and it's so funny, I think about it now, I could cry saying it, but I said, so I've fought for everything in my life.
Mm.
I said, I ain't got any fight left. I said, I was crying. I said, if this is what it is, I ain't got any fight left, I said to her. And I just thought, I ain't got it. And what was funny, and I really resent the language around cancer, that it's a fight or stand up to cancer or F you cancer, all that sort of stuff. What actually it was, it wasn't a fight. I didn't fight. I went, oh, okay, I'm just, like, it was like I went,
right.
It was like the opposite. It was. Yeah. It got deep. It was like I threw myself into life. It was like I said, they can treat the cancer, I'll do life. And I worked like a lunatic because I just thought. And also what I did, in a weird way, I had to. It's so disempowering, especially to the layperson. And I think there's a working class me. Well, doctor said, you know what I mean? You're scared to challenge them. Every letter, every scan filled me with such anxiety. I thought, oh, I can't stay like this in this. This is not healthy.
No.
So what I kind of had to do, I had to really go, I'm okay with dying. Wow. If I die, I'm all right with that. And I said to my husband, I said, tell me you and the kids will be all right. And we'll be all right.
So I said,
all right, then I'm all right. If I can handle the, but I think that's a mentality of like, if I can handle the worst, I can handle anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I go into an argument, I think, can I take them? you know what I mean? I mean, if I can handle the worst, I'm in it. So I think that was my approach in a weird way. But in that, I had to do that to dissipate the fear. And then it was about, like, come on, life. I'm not done with you yet. I'm obsessed with near-death experiences. I read about them a lot. Listen to them a lot. I love them. And it seems to boil down to life as a choice. And that's not to say anyone that dies chose to die. But I did lose a sister to this. I lost a sister to breast cancer.
And me and
my sister, sort of about 15 years ago now. But what my other sister was saying, I've got a lot of sisters, but one of my other sisters saying, she said, you know, when I look at how you did it, I think she had no chance. Do you know what I mean? Just where she was in life, everything was a bit messy and it was all a bit heavy around her. And I think, I was just held in love. And so I do just believe in the power of that. And it's sort of funny when people sort of go, especially when I was actually ill, oh, I won't bore you with this or you're really going through it. But I don't, it's not a hierarchy of that. Because I think actually if you're someone in an unhappy marriage or you're not taking care of yourself or you're in a career you don't want or everything's a bit rubbish, that's as damaging to cancer to me. That's almost like the start of it. Do you know what I mean? They say and so, I think that's, it's kind of made me a lot more open to the priorities of life.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's like sometimes, we know this game, you get on the, I mean, and my career's going great, but you get on the, you get a bit crunky about it. And when I'm like that, I have to step back for myself and go, if your whole life was just the circuit, you'd just be happy. I'm like, I have to remind myself. That's the only bit of this whole job that I like, the circuit. That's it. I don't like I don't. I mean, I like the money, but I don't like it. Give me the circuit all day long. And I think, if my baseline is good, then I'm good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I know what you mean. It must have been hard because I've got a couple of friends of mine that have been diagnosed now, one with breast cancer, one with, I can't remember what he said, but he messaged me the other day to say goodbye. He's like, there's nothing else to do. And he goes, I'm just letting a few people know now, I'm going to do a big thing on Facebook. And then another mate of mine, she's just been diagnosed with breast cancer. And it's just, I don't know, I've never had anyone message me to say, look, this is what's happening. I'm going to give it everything. I'm still having the treatment, but I don't think this is, so I'm just saying this is, you know, I might not see you. And I'm like, fuck, I was devastated. And you get into that point again when you've gone, well, that might happen. So,
yeah.
And you how do you make your peace with that? Like, that's, I know you said you did, and you know, you kind of talk to your partner, and you're like, right, I just, and you're like, you kind of setting everything out, going, right, as long as all this is in place,
yeah,
you're gonna be all right. How did you cope with that? That's the bit that I can't get my head around.
I mean, that was more just a mentality that I had to get into.
Mm. You're right, mate. Not, it's nice.
No, yeah, of course. This is a lot. No, I'm crying for you. Mm. That was a mentality I had to get into in order to not keep being in this fearful, anxious state.
Yeah.
The actual thought of if I went for a scan tomorrow and they said, no, it's everywhere. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, because they can't give you a guarantee. And that is a lot. And the thing is, we are all going to die.
Yeah, I know.
Like, we are all going to die. So it's such a drop in the ocean, our life. And it's, and you know, people live their whole lives not having lived. You know, people live their whole lives just so laden with the things that they're not healed from, things that they're not fully satisfied with. And it's such an honour to do, I wait so long to do this and to just live on my terms and, you know, to have found love, to be in love and to have children and all those sorts of things. And I saw Jamie Dornan on Desert Island Discs talking about his mum passing. And his dad had said, okay, this is going to affect us, but don't let it define us. And I think I am very interested in the fact that we are just the stories we tell ourselves. And some people, and I've done it in my life, got stuck in a loop and a narrative about who I am and what's happened to me. And actually, the truth is, it's not easy. It's not click your fingers. But sometimes you just get bored of your own bullshit. Anyone with addictions, you just end up going, I just want to tell another story. You know what I mean? I want a story. You know, when I had my eldest, it's like I had ambition and I was doing stuff, you know, for ambition for both of us. And I was, you know, on my own with her and dating. And then I just had to change the story. Like, and that helped me make way for, you know, my lovely husband. And then we kind of, he's a musician and I admitted to him I wanted to be a comedian. We were both sort of not fulfilling our potential. And then just, we just level up. I sound like fucking Will Smith and Jada Pinkett, you know, I mean, it's like that kind of, that sense of just wanting more and having the heart and having the sense of a bit of heart and a realisation you deserve more and changing the narrative from our kids, the sky's the limit and all that sort of stuff. And it will hurt me if it was terminal and the thought of saying goodbye to my kids would hurt me. But I'd like to think that they've got enough in them that it wouldn't define them.
I know,
and
what
I'd
you mean.
Make sure that's the story that they're told. Don't let it define you, because I think you can just get stuck in a loop.
Yeah.
My dad died when I was young. I was about 10 when my dad died, and I remember thinking, "Well, this is it. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to anyone." So that's me now. Like, but then within seconds, the vicar's coming round, and the funeral's getting planned, and you're going Marks and Spencer's for a pair of black shoes. And you go, oh, what? You still got to go up Ilford when your dad's dead. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you understand what I mean? It's like, you go, and at 10, I thought our world keeps turning. Do you know what I mean? And actually, we all took care of each other. And I thought, it's like I quit work, I quit teaching. Didn't go back in September, found a lump on my breast. If my story, Rich, for the rest of my life was I almost made it as a comedian, but she got cancer when she quit work, no one would argue with that. That would just be a story that everyone would go, fair play.
Yeah.
If someone was saucy enough to go, so you could have still done it. Everyone would be like, oh, my God, she's got a cancer patient. But they're spot on. And sometimes those pricks that you're mates with, they go, so go, crack on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my sister always goes, all right, childhood was hard, it's over now.
I mean, what did you happen, though, when you're young? Yeah, go on.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I mean, that's the least of the bad shit he did. But no, the die. But, you just change the story. And actually, I have to have faith that my kids, they'd miss me forever, but they'd be all right. I've got to trust that. And I do believe cosmically I'd be around them, you know, but oh God, do I love them. Like I just, you know, I know that sounds obvious, but I mean, if I'm working too much, I just feel desperate to just, I feel so disconnected from them and, you know.
I do know what you mean. When I was, because my lads, so I was a bit older when I started comedy. So my other two boys were sort of, they were like my, they were sort of becoming teenagers. So they were, my youngest was my youngest was, he wasn't quite a teenager yet, but my eldest was just getting into it. And then I was away most weekends. I was lucky I was with a partner who was in the business and she was like, no, it's all right. We'll work it out. We'll work it out. Don't worry. So I was really lucky in that respect. But there was that kind of, now I look back, I missed that and I missed that. I missed out on that. And I missed out on that. And now with Bodhi, I'm like, so I was away the last couple of days working and I was so desperate to get back and just have him.
Yeah.
And just go, mate, it's all right. And then that today with that, when I'm like, I'm trying to do this. And then he's just like, nah, we ain't doing that, Dad. I need a shit and a sleep.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right. And I'm like that. It's like, I want, and I'm, you know, I'm like, you know, we're busy people, but
yeah,
I want to make sure this time that I'm not so busy.
No,
that I miss out on so much.
Nothing else matters, does it?
Nah.
Do you know what I mean? And everyone knows that balance is really hard, but yeah. And so, I don't know. I've seen it. I've seen it with people when they're dying, though. Like, they're all right. Like, there is something. They break through into another little realm and their priorities shift and they're ready for it. There's very few people that go, no, I'm screaming. No. And like, you know, there's a natural process where as your body diminishes, you know what I mean? There's less of the world about you. You're ready to... My mum always says about my daddy, cross shallow waters, you know, he was ready, you know, he ready to, you know, and whatever it is. So I do have a lot of faith. I believe in God and I'm not saying I'm not going up to a Philadelphia advert up there. It's not that, but I just believe we'll all be sort of just light and vibrations and.
Yeah, that's what I believe. You just go back into the universe.
Yeah. But as a recognisable.
Oh, really? Yeah, right.
Yeah, not quite recognisable, you know, but as in you'd know the spirit you were encountering, I believe. And I don't know, you've got to get at peace with things, didn't you? And, you know, a big load of the work I did was, you know, with restorative yoga and cranial stuff. Everything was future with me. Everything was speculative. In 3 months, it was all crap. And that's what I've worked on. I'm very good at it. I've got to bring it back to today always.
Yeah.
I've just... And that's been such a powerful lesson, if you know what I mean. Like, just to be like, I'm not in the past, I'm not in the future, I'm here, and it's all right, and all that sort of good stuff. So,
yeah.
It's good. I mean, what else are we doing here? What else are we doing? I mean, you want to make some money, of course. You want to take care of business. You want to make these connections. But what are we all doing? What is it? What is the point if it's not human connection? And, you know, why do we do what we do? We want to nail a bit of truth. You know what I mean? It's not just jokes. We want to say, isn't this the actual truth? We want to nail, like, we want to really pull out something really tasty for other people to go, oh, yeah, aren't we all the same? You know what I mean? And that's all, you know, we're maybe a crude art form or the best because... We are doing that, and it's so lovely. And I said to a comedian the other night, I said, it's funny, you've got your material, but what it is, when you're going on stage, you don't know the material you're working with because the audience is the material. You don't know the density of the clay you're moulding. Like, you might know so you always go on and go, or you're trying to work out, what is this room? And that's when you know you're doing the good stuff, when you're not just going, I mean, you trust that your jokes, whatever room, can just bang, bang, bang.
Mm.
But you know when it's the good stuff, when you're being really present and going, what's actually, there's no greater joy when you call out something in the room that no one else has quite unlocked.
Yes. Yeah. It's a beautiful feeling. Yeah. Do you find, like, you talk about your childhood before, did you find, because you had such a difficult time growing up, you find
it wasn't
that...
It wasn't necessarily a difficult time, but losing my dad and things like that. Mm. I don't want to mark my childhood. Like, my mum was brilliant. We had a load of good laugh. It was just fun and games. But just shit that happens, first boyfriend, you know, all that sort
of
stuff.
Do you know what I mean?
It's not as if we were getting beaten or anything. It was just sort of things that affect you and things that come through. Do you know what I mean? Like those sorts of things. Yeah.
I was very aware because I was only 19 when Lisa was pregnant with my first one. So I was still a kid anyway.
Yeah, of course.
So I hadn't even grown up, and it's, you know, and it's funny looking back now, and I hadn't really sort of processed my childhood. It wasn't a shit. It was like you. It wasn't a shit one. There was just, you know, you got shouted
at. Don't come away unscathed. Yeah.
No, it's just how it was, because they were, you know, your parents before that, they had, you know, your parents had to deal with their shit.
Yeah.
And they weren't even aware that they had shit to deal with.
And then,
you know, we were the first sort of generation that kind of went, hang on a minute. Let's not have this. That's not how you talk to your kids. That's not how you do this. That's not how you do that.
Yeah.
And so I was very much aware of that as I went along, as I got older. But when I first had the first one, I was very kind of not bed at this time. Do this and do that. I was very sort of, because I remembered what I'd had when I was growing up. And now I think I'm going to be so. I was a bit chilled later on. I was all like, nah, stay up. Fuck it. Here, I'll have a hot dog at midnight. You know, I was a bit more loose, but I think now I'm going to be the other way. I'm going to be too loose. I'm going to be just, you know.
Do you know what? It's really funny because I'd say the same. I can reflect on being a little... Well, the thing is as well, when you're young and money's tight and all that sort of thing, the stakes are higher, aren't they, with your first kid? And you're like, fuck, you asked for that. You didn't even use it. Everything's a bit stressy, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? But, you know, I went into, because I've done it again, haven't I? I've got the 21-year-old and I've got the 8 and 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Oh, do you know what? I might have to run up to the loo. Is that all right?
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, go on.
I want to just go one minute.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
There we go.
It's the Bodhi way. Just stop for a toilet break every time.
He's awake now. He's awake now.
Oh, bless.
Kate's bathing.
Kate there. So, bless her.
Yeah, go on, sorry.
But then you think, I'm going to go into it like this. And my best mate, Natalie, said something really funny. She said, sometimes whatever you try and overcompensate for, you make your own set of problems. Do you know what I mean? Like, so my eldest, I was probably like, she just looks on like eyebrow raised, the sort of gentle parenting I'm doing with these pair of pricks that I've raised. But she's so lovely and spot on. But I just think, these two little indulged kids that I have.
Yeah.
So I'm making my own problems. See, I mean, and sometimes they just have to get a bit of old school parenting too. You know, them ones where you sort of, they've gone too far on a Saturday morning. You know, those ones where your mum would give you the hairdryer treatment, but you're like, I should take a piss, that's why. I'm the only one who bloody does anything. You do that rage cleaning where you're just telling them about themselves. And they just don't know, the two little ones are like, Because they just, you know, they just don't. It's like, I don't. Sometimes you just got to go. They've survived. They'll survive a little cussing out here and
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. It's like my boys. They've seen all sorts, and it. And now they just laugh at me. You go, oh, Dad, do you remember when you did that? You remember you lost your shit?
Yeah. On that pier when I'd lost my bag of 2p's. But you're tired of fucking piss. One fucking one, that's what it fucking is.
He told me one the other day, when he went, do you remember that? Because we used to have this dining room table, and it was by, so we had these patio doors that went out onto this, like, this thing that we had. It sounds really posh, but it wasn't. We live in this big wooden house they're about to knock down, and we were just kind of like basically minding the land, but you know, living in this house. And we had this terrace and these patio doors, and he wouldn't eat his dinner. And I just picked it up and I frisbeed it out the patio doors on the plate. He goes, remember, Dad, remember you frisbeed my dinner?
It's so funny though, but like I sort of think that's even nicer, because I couldn't imagine saying to my mum, do you remember when? She'd be like, no. Like she'd shut it down, now sort of thing. So it was like, oh well, sorry, I tried my best. But I think like even the fact that your eldest are safe to say all that sort of stuff is quite funny. And everyone's got them stories. We used to love, I've got this stupid joke where I was like, you know, I was parenting old school, my mum beat me in a caravan on the Isle of Sheppey just for saying booyaka. And it's just so funny. And I just said it just to wind her up. And she was like, booyaka. She was like, booyaka. I'll give you booyaka. And honestly, my siblings couldn't move for laughing. It was just this sort of, ha ha, Laura got it. Do you know what I mean? But I don't think of that at all as anything other than, yeah, we were rotten. We were just on the wind up the whole caravan holiday. Do you know what I mean? And like, what, she was going to flip at one point. It was just on me. Do you know what I mean?
That's it. I remember. Yeah, I remember getting chased around the house because I called my dad a plonker.
Such an old school word.
Oh, he shut up, your plonker, and he just said, what? And he just chased you around. And we didn't have a. It wasn't a big house. It was just that we had. It was just like there was two. There were doors either end of the lounge. You could just run around.
My brother's got really funny stories. He told my dad to shut his mouth, so he got a proper clump in it. It was just that sort of testing.
I remember the one, and I've said this before on here, when the one and only time that I was a teenager, I was horrible. I was a shit teenager, and I called my dad the C word. He launched me across the lounge, and rightly so. Like properly,
but this is it. Right. But I genuinely, yeah. I'm not just saying it. There's a funny story when I was teacher training, and they were talking about corp. And the person who trained me to teach, sorry, I've dived in on your story. The person who trained me to teach was saying that when he was, you know, starting out as a teacher, this dad went basically about corporal punishment. He goes, "Well, I was hit, and it never did me any harm like that," do you know what I mean? So basically that's just very funny. But I genuinely, those stories are funny. It was, I think the things that you carry with you is more, which I think new parenting is evolving from, is like that sense of heavy judgment. You know, that sort of, you make a mistake, so you're a piece of shit, not just, I did a shitty thing. And I try and just lean into my kids with their feelings a little bit to say, you know, it's all right sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're allowed to feel like this. You're allowed to have bad feelings, and that's cool, you know, and a lot more of that, not just either keep them happy or shut them up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think it's like you said earlier, it's that, like you've just said, that's just because you do a shitty thing doesn't mean you're a shit person. So like, that behaviour doesn't define you as who you are. You know? And I think, yeah, like you're right, where we are now, it's like a better understanding of that. Whereas it took when we were younger was like one person to go, they do one shit thing. You wouldn't go, oh, there must be some shit going on at home. What a wanker. Never speak to that person again.
Or just how the school system dealt with it. You were naughty, you were a wrong one. Like, actually, I think there's lots of layers of like you know, I sort of think, oh God, I started secondary school just after my dad died. I had a nightmare time. And I think, who was looking out? You know, you look back and go, who was looking out for me? Do you know what I mean? And I think when I went into teaching, I was very, and someone says this thing about you, you know, become the teacher or the adult or the mother or whatever that you wish you had. So I do really allow for a lot of feelings in my kids. And look, my mum was great, don't get me wrong. You know, she was widowed with four kids and stepkids as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, and she was the same age I was. So how she even kept us together, I look back and just think she's a superwoman. I would, there's nothing I wouldn't do for my mum. Even now, like, I've been in a writer's room for a couple of weeks. We walk the dogs together every day. We talk all the time. What are you doing for a bit of lunch? Like, I'm so, and I'm the only one that lives near her now. So I really feel that kind of closeness. And I was going to say responsibility, but that's sort of mugging her off a little bit. She don't, but that sense of like, I'm my mum's sort of kid around here. So and I miss her. Do you know what I mean? And there's nothing I wouldn't do for her to make her life a bit more comfortable or do whatever she needs, because I wouldn't have survived being a single mum without her. I wouldn't have survived a lot of stuff in my teens without her. Do you know what I mean? So I'm not trying to sort of go, oh, I'm changing how I was parented. But you do want to progress. You want to provide. You do want to get better. I want my kids to be better than me. Yeah. I want them to go out into the world not having to overcome any sense of like a lack of worthiness. I want them to be entitled little farts. I want them to know their way around a wide list. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
What are we doing if not progressing? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I was talking to somebody the other day and they said that there's a lot of kids that do have anxiety and things like that, but there's not the fear that we had growing up.
No.
Which is nice. Like, my boys aren't scared of me, which is lovely. No.
But the anxiety, you do want a little bit of just suck it up. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was funny because something happened at school yesterday and then I was gigging. I was working all day and then gigged out in Reading and then coming back and my husband had sent a picture where my middle one had made a feelings chart for the little one to tick, and I sort of rolled my eyes a bit. Yeah. Like, sometimes feelings are just feelings. I think we're in a kind of feelings are king.
Yeah.
And actually, I was chatting to one of my sisters, I've done loads, like I say, but she was going, oh, I'm trying to work on this, I feel like this, I feel like, I said, well, you're stretched. Do you know what I mean? You've gone back to study. You're going into a new absolute profession. Call it. You know, we were sort of talking about, I've got better at going, sometimes when I'm like, you know, boo to the world and, oh God, or I'm paranoid and I'm resentful and I'm all this sort of thing. I've got better at going, I'm tired.
I'm stretched.
I start seeing them as warning lights on the car rather than going, why am I such an horrible cunt? You know, we get all heavy on ourselves. So this whole, my anxiety, I don't buy it. My oldest is so funny. She saw this thing where she went, and I quote it all the time, where she says, when I'm feeling rubbish and not myself and anxious or weird or whatever, she goes, I check on myself like a baby. Has baby slept? Has baby ate? Has baby, you know, drunk water? Has baby, you know, played? Has baby, you know? And you start, if you do that to yourself, you go, oh, yeah, actually, I've been working day and night for about a fortnight. You know what I mean? I've probably had three Guinness last night because I bumped into a Shadrach bar. Do you know what I mean? Like, I sort of, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you go, yeah, I feel like this. So rather than go, oh, I'm really anxious, I just don't buy into it. I think you go, well, take care of business and then see how you feel. Hand in that essay, get to work on time, have that convo you're avoiding with your boss. You know what I mean? Deal with that. Get a bit of freaking salad down, y'all. See how you feel.
I think you're right. There is a bit of that, yeah.
But it's more just, I'm not denying real mental health issues. But what I'm saying is we put too much stock in feelings.
Yeah.
And actually, rather than see them for what they are, which is a kind of a measure of where you're at sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's when people, like, I think people, what they're trying to do is avoid the feeling of being anxious altogether.
Yeah.
Like, they don't want to be uncomfortable ever. And, you know, and if they, it's a slight uncomfortable, slightly uncomfortable, like, oh, no, it's my anxiety, it's my this, it's my that. It's like, no. You're in a new situation, meeting new people.
Yeah.
You're going to be anxious, but you just got to go and do it. And then the next time you do it, it gets better. If you start hiding yourself away from all these feelings, you're never going to get anywhere.
And it gets worse. And I saw this, another thing, and I definitely made this mistake in my oldest. Good mental health is not being happy all the time. Good mental health is being, having an appropriate response to things.
Yeah.
So you told that heartbreaking story. Your friends text you goodbye. They're not going to survive their illness. But you might be sad for a month or two or more. That's okay. You might have a low-level sadness. And because we're in this, like, dopamine-chasing phone thing, we're not actually in tune with what we're feeling. You're entitled to feel, to just check in with yourself. Yeah. You know, my father-in-law turned 80 yesterday and he's had sort of health issues. And then my mum was turning 75. And all of a sudden, he was all fine, my father-in-law. But all of a sudden, I was in a bit of a soppy way for a few weeks. Mm. I thought, it's not nice. This generation getting older, we're in the business end of being kids. And I just allowed those feelings because that's right. That's spot on. Do you know what I mean? I weren't like, I'm low, I better do. I thought, no, I'm actually tuning into something here and I'm listening to it. Do you know what I mean? Or exactly that. I'm fearful. I've got a lot on. I'm overwhelmed. They're all right. It's all okay. But to want to just feel okay all the time is very dangerous.
Yeah.
That is.
I think that's it. I think we're in the middle of a massive overcorrection because now we're getting in tune with our feelings, but now we're letting, like you said, we're letting our feelings dominate. And I say this all the time. I'm like, if you make arrangements to go and see someone, go and see them. You know, go and meet for that coffee. Because people go, but my anxiety is playing up today. They go, of course it is. But if you go, you'll feel so much better.
I know.
I promise you, you'll feel better every time.
It's the Emily Dickinson thing. She says, if your nerve fails, you go above your nerve.
Yeah.
And that's what I always do. I go, you trust. It's like even, you know, wanting a bad thing. I know how I'm going to feel after a McDonald's or a Chinese. So I just have to go, I know I'm going to feel after that. Stop it. And it's same with the good stuff. You go, and also because everyone's a prick on socials.
Yeah.
So you're like, I can't bother to go out with the girls. They're all dickheads. And then you go out of them and go, oh, no, they're not. Everyone's a dickhead on socials.
A dickhead on the socials. Absolutely. But now, you know, you've come through all that. Now your career's going through the roof. Like, you must be buzzing. You know, now you're going on tour.
Yeah, on tour. I am buzzing. I'm so grateful. And that was, a gratitude is a big thing. I when I was in like a dark hole, early diagnosis, I saw Oprah said, if she could only do one thing, tell anyone, is write a gratitude list. And I'm just grateful all the time. I'm grateful. I've done photo shoots for the tour, all those, all preparing it, all my work in progress, finding out who my audience are, the whole process I've been grateful for, and I'm just excited to see what it brings. Yeah, I am going on tour. So, the living my best life is obviously a bit of a mug off to hashtag living my best life and all the way people do it. But it's also, I'm living my best life. When I was ill, a mate who had bowel cancer fell pregnant.
Wow.
And she came round to see me and just said, right, you've got to be positive. And her pregnancy became a symbol of sort of hope for me, like, there is life. And I can't defeat, if anyone's going through it, me just chucking it all over the country on this tour is to say, look at me.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Look at me.
Look at you. But when you found out, is it in remission now? Are you in the clear?
From surgery, they believe that. So that's 2 years since or more. So then everything else was what they call adjuvant. So like keeping me safe. So 6 months chemo, because it was all in my lymph nodes. But 6 months chemo and 3 weeks radiotherapy. And I was still on loads of hormone blocking tablets because it was an estrogen cancer. So I'm in menopause.
Oh my God.
So I'll be on them for sort of 10 years. I always said it was like, you want bish, bash, bosh. I kept getting stuck on bish and bash. And then you go, and then I'm like, I'm still on pills and I'm menopausal. I said, I'm still not at bosh. And you're not, do you know what I mean? No one can give you a guarantee. You're obviously trying to get past that 5-year mark and 10-year mark and all those sorts of things. But I just don't feel dying, do you know what I mean? I just don't feel it.
I love that. I've got a friend of mine that, he was on here and he was talking about how he's HIV positive, and he just said, he goes, I remember when I got it. He goes, I wasn't doing anything particularly AIDS-y. So I think that's it. You need that humour.
Yeah, of course. Listen, the best people are just people that have been through some shit, aren't they? They just, you don't, it's like when you meet, when you're younger and these 60, 70, 80 year olds are giving you this advice and all, don't, you know, and you think, what do you know? You're from a different era. They're not. Human nature ain't changed.
No.
They've just lived it all.
Yeah.
You know, me trying to sort of coach my daughter through dating, she don't know every bar of it. I'm just some div that don't know anything. Like, and I could see it all a mile off, and then she'll know it all when she's 40. And then, you know, same way my mum, I'll go, you don't get it, mum.
Yeah.
Or what, just love them and forgive them, whatever, boomer.
Oh, mate. But when does the tour start?
First weekend of April, I'm in Winchester, then I'm doing a double Birmingham, and then I can't remember, the next weekend I've got some nice ones as well. I'm doing Maidstone, Winchester, then Maidstone, then Birmingham the following weekend, and Bath, and then it just keeps going and going.
Lovely.
And then I end up in Hackney Empire in June 21st.
Yes, mate. Well
which
done.
Which is just lovely.
That's going to be the one, isn't it?
It's going to be the one. I'm going to have a DJ and everything.
Yeah, proper. I like that. Nice one. Laura, thank you so much for today.
Thank you, Rich. It's been lovely.
It's been great, and I appreciate your patience.
Honoured to meet Bodie. Thank you.
There you go. It's the first time on the pod. There you go. Top lad.
Lovely.
Thank you for joining us. This has been Insane in the Membrane. I've been Rich Wilson. This has been the lovely Laura Smith. Catch her on tour, and we'll see you next time. Insane in the Membrane.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.